You're listening to Cannabis Health Radio. Here are your hosts, Ian Jessup and Corey Yelland.
Welcome back. This is episode 226 of Cannabis Health Radio, and I'm Ian Jessup.
And I'm Corey Yelland.
It's estimated that more than 150,000 women worldwide die of ovarian cancer each year. Ovarian cancer often has no symptoms at the early stages, so the disease is generally advanced when it's diagnosed. The five-year survival rate ranges from approximately 30 to 50%. Our guest today is Patty, who doesn't want us to use her last name. She was diagnosed with ovarian cancer 2 years ago this month and given 6 to 8 months to live. And she joins us from Ohio to tell us her story. Patty, thanks for joining us.
Thank you for having me.
Now, you must feel pretty good today knowing that you defied the odds that your doctor gave you 2 years ago, saying you'd be dead within 6 to 8 months.
Yes, sir. It was actually two doctors, two different cancer treatment centers. Both gave me same diagnosis. One was in August of 2017. And so that one, I pretty much went home and started giving my stuff away. I went for a second opinion in September of 2017. He agreed with the first doctor. However, he said he didn't see an expiration date stamped on me anywhere. So I started chemo.
So, Patty, when you went to the first doctor in August of 2017, 2 years ago this month.
Correct.
And, well. Go ahead.
Yes. Well, let me explain. I had no symptoms at all. Mm-hmm. I went in July 5th for my yearly female visit. Mm-hmm. To the gynecologist. He called me back a week later to come in, which was actually, it was July 13th I went in. He said it was only uterine cancer. And then I made the appointment for July 24th for the first cancer treatment center in Houston. And there they did a biopsy and had to call me back for a second biopsy on August 4th. So that was actually then my second biopsy at that location. So that's how August comes into the picture.
And then you went to the doctor again on August 8th for your diagnosis. And he gave you the prognosis of 6 to 8 months.
Correct. He actually called me over the phone. He said he never does it over the phone, but I was in Texas and I lived up here. And before I got on the plane to come home, he told me not to go anywhere because it was much worse than what they expected.
Did he try and get you on chemo right away?
Absolutely. He wanted me on chemo that day. And what I asked was, what was the chemo going to do? And he said it was maybe going to give me 2 extra months of life.
So what did you do at that point? Did you say, yes, I'm going to do it? Or what's going through your mind?
I said no. And that's when I went back up here. Again, I started giving everything away. I used to ride a motorcycle. I gave that away. Friends and family, come take what you want. Before I was running out of time. So I went home and started giving everything away. My boyfriend, he worked at a RV repair shop, and a woman came in and they started talking. She had stage 4 ovarian cancer and went to the hospital in Chicago and told me to give it a try. However, I had already started the oil. So, and let me go back just a little bit. And I had told the doctor in Houston on my biopsy on August 4th that I was taking the oil, and he just kind of blew me off. And then he had to call me back on August 8th and told me how bad it was. I also told the doctor in Chicago then that I was doing the oil, and of course they don't want to talk to you about it. But I had already been on it. I have to tell you this too, because this concerns me and I don't know. why I think research needs to be done. I started oil on July 31st, and when I had my scans from the first hospital in Houston till I had scans again, of course, at the next hospital in Chicago, my cancer was growing. Very small, but the scan showed growth compared to the scans just a month before. Once I started chemo, it knocked it right out.
So how many chemo treatments did you have?
I started chemo treatments on September 14th in Chicago, and I had three. And I need to put this into, I'm sorry, but both doctors had told me I was incurable and inoperable. I didn't even have a chance to have surgery. It wasn't even an option. So I did three chemo treatments of carboplatin Taxol every 3 weeks. And I actually, it was November 17th, and I went in to tell the doctor I quit. Because at that point, remember, they had told me I was incurable, I was inoperable, chemo was only going to give me 2 extra months. Mm-hmm. I already had bed sores. I couldn't get out of bed. I couldn't eat. I had lost 70 pounds. I couldn't get to the bathroom by myself. And I quit. And so I went into my appointment to tell him I wasn't going to do it no more. Not for just 2 extra months. And he said, you're going to go have surgery. And I was like, you told me I was never going to have surgery. But the cancer had shrunk so much that I was able to have a radical hysterectomy on December 12th of 2017. But I had to wait because I had just done chemo, so I had to wait for the chemo to get out of my body before they could do the surgery. After a recovery from surgery, I did three more carboplatin Taxol treatments, and then that was the end.
So during all of this time, from, say, July 31st, when you started cannabis, were you taking the cannabis throughout, every day?
Every day. The only time I did not take it is when I went in the hospital in December and had surgery. I didn't take it for like the first 3 days. I have to tell you an incredible story about the surgery.
Sure.
You've got to hear this. But so I didn't take it for about 3 days, and I was laying there, and I have all the IVs going. I had the PICC line. I think there was 8 IVs, and they said, your blood pressure's going up. So they said, we need to give you something. So they come over to put a medicine in the IV for blood pressure. And my blood pressure shot up to like 222 over 187. So they thought I was having a stroke because whatever they gave me went the opposite way. So I told them, please just leave me alone for a little bit because now I'm scared, right? And I had my son. He was there with me. He actually got me my medicine. I call it my medicine out of my bag, and within 20 to 30 minutes, my blood pressure went down to 117 over 93. And that's from taking my medicine, the oil.
What did the doctor say about that?
Well, one of the surgeons, I can't use names and you can't say which hospital because I don't want them to be caught. But she was very interested, and a matter of fact, this part, if you can't include this, I don't know how else, but her mom, she was so impressed, the point that I was even able to have surgery, and then I got finished telling you more about surgery, but her mom, when I went back in January for a follow-up, was in that cancer hospital, and her mom was on the oil. But she can't tell anybody because she's a doctor. Mm-hmm. So now, but let me go back a little bit on the surgery. So I'm laying and I'm out of, you know, recovery. It's like day three. We already did the blood pressure thing. And the nurse comes in and says, why aren't you using any pain medicine? I said, I am. It's hanging there in the bag. And she said, no, you have to push this blue button. I said, nobody told me to push the blue button.
And you were fine without it.
I was fine without it. So that's my point. So I told them, get this out of my arm. If I've been laying here for 3 days not using it, I want it out. And so that was a whole nother issue. I didn't have I think it was 0.04 of whatever was hanging in that bag.
So you were taking oil, were you? Is that what you were doing for your pain then?
No, I didn't have anything.
Okay.
Nothing. So until my blood pressure went up, then I had my oil. And then now when I'm going home from surgery, they're pushing. You need something for the pain to go home. And I said, I've been here 8 days. I haven't had anything for the pain. I don't want anything. And my follow-up was in 3 weeks. And I said, okay, you give me the lowest whatever you got, and I only want 20 pills. Because I'll be back in 3 weeks. And they gave me, I think it was oxycodone, like a 5 milligram or something, because I didn't want anything. But I didn't have a primary care physician, so they want me to have something just in case. And, you know, it was an 8-hour drive home from the hospital, and I took a half a pill when we got home, only because I wanted to prevent hurting, right, just in case. And that's the last time I ever touched them. I took them back with me to the hospital, and I said, y'all need to quit giving people this stuff. It's not needed. So, and I'm not saying I'm Wonder Woman, but it there's something in it. I don't know. I don't know if it was a coating already in my body, or plus I need to feel when I'm hurting. You know, I don't want to take that other stuff. So I don't know what it was, but it worked.
Well, I think it's a credit to the doctors as well, who knew that you were taking cannabis and still allowed you to do it. Because we've talked to people who, some doctors get very exercised about people taking cannabis.
No, and here a little bit more of the story on the surgery. Before surgery, I had to be trained on a colonoscopy bag and ileoscopy bag. So it's one for the bladder and one for the bowel, mm-hmm. because surgery, you know, because you never know. And I was talking to the nurse then, because I want them all to know exactly what I was taking, how much, you know, this is what I'm doing. And she's part of the Nurses for Cannabis group. But, you know, I didn't need any of that. I needed nothing. I had no complications. I had nothing. So, nothing.
How much cannabis were you taking?
A gram a day.
Gram a day.
Divided over 3 doses?
Yes.
And did you do it all orally?
Yes, okay, I'd take it all orally. And I started under the tongue, you know, with just the little rice size amount, mm-hmm. until I couldn't, you know, I started needing to take more and more, and I couldn't take the taste anymore. And so I put it in a capsule.
Okay.
And then I take it by a capsule.
Yeah. Did you get buzzed right away?
At first, when I first started taking it, absolutely. I would sit there and drool. But I just think, you know, just, and I used to smoke it, you know, all my life. And, you know, you take a break when you have kids and you can't afford it anymore, that kind of thing. But absolutely. But now my body's used to it, so it's not like that. However, I still get tired. Mm-hmm. You know, so it's the indica part that just makes you sleepy.
Sleepy, yeah.
So I take it in the morning when I get up, and then I take another one before I go to bed.
But no more drooling.
No.
But you know, Patty, think of it this way. So many people get dry mouth from cannabis. Yes. You had it made in the shade. You were just drooling instead.
I was just drooling. And it's, you know, it's saving my life. Yeah. It's got to be that, because I don't do anything, you know, this is horrible to say, but I don't do anything extra different.
No. Well, ovarian cancer's very much a killer. I'm sure you're aware of that. And for you to be where you're at this far down the road is nothing short of a miracle.
Right. Well, and they still haven't determined that it's fallopian tubular cancer versus ovarian cancer. So fallopian tubular cancer is supposed to be even worse of a survival rate. Mm. But I try not to think about that. And I just, you know, I get up and I take my, and I got to say this too, because this is in the research and I joke about it all the time, but it's non-addictive, because sometimes in the morning, if I get up and I start doing stuff, I forget to take my morning dose. Mm-hmm. So if it was addictive, I'd be looking for that dose. And yeah. I, you know, before I know it, I'm like, oh, forget it. It's 2 o'clock. If I take it now, I'll need a nap. So that's, people need to research, and it's saving lives.
You know, Patty, what is remarkable is the surgery that you had. It was very, very radical surgery. It's very, very tough. And you went through it, your recovery, without pain. That is just absolutely remarkable.
No pain meds.
No pain meds, yeah.
Right. I of course, I was uncomfortable. Not overly uncomfortable. I hurt worse from the chemo than I did from the surgery.
Oh, yeah.
My legs used to hurt so bad that they would shake from chemo. So this was, it almost was like it was nothing. But I do have to tell you kind of a funny story too. When I went to go have my checkup, follow-up after surgery, they had to make a vaginal cuff. And while she was doing my exam, she said, oh, you know, she's doing the exam and I'm laying on a table. She said, well, your vaginal cuff isn't healing. You have to be careful because your insides would fall off. And she just keeps talking like, okay, but everything else looks good. And I was like, wait, what did you
Whoa,
just say?
Whoa, back up there. Just a tad, please.
And she just kind of threw that in there. And I was like, wow, you know, she's like, just be careful when you're in the shower. And I was like, oh, okay. So then I asked like 3 visits later, because, you know, I always thought about it. And because I said, what do I do? Just put it in a grocery bag and carry them to the hospital? And she was like, no, that you'd be dead. And I was like, well, thanks for not telling me then. But that was a kind of a, it just sticks in my head every time I get in the shower now. So anyway, that was, but no, none of that, nothing. I've healed perfectly. I have no troubles. I have nothing. I'm missing the energy. In hindsight, I think that was my symptom, was I had
lack of energy.
Yeah. Otherwise, I had no idea I was that sick. I had no idea.
Yeah, they say with ovarian cancer, there are virtually no symptoms.
Yeah, they call it silent killer.
The silent killer, yeah.
Yeah.
I thought I was getting old. You know, just carrying a laundry basket up the stairs, I was like, ugh. And that's, I just thought, that's what turning 50 does. I had no idea. So I'm yelling it now. I every lady I see, every lady at the store, make sure everybody, you tell everybody, go every year. Don't miss.
Do you tell them what you took for your ovarian cancer?
Some people, yes, I do. I try to share it with everybody. And it breaks my heart that there's some people who won't even try.
Yeah.
Since I've been diagnosed, 4 people close to me who wouldn't try are gone. They wouldn't even try. So some, 2 were in Texas where it's very highly illegal. Mm-hmm. So I kind of understand. But I don't know, if I was fighting for my life, I'd move.
What's the legality in Ohio?
It's legal. However, a friend of mine, I do not have a card. A couple different reasons, because there's still discussions about having a medical marijuana card and being a legal gun owner. There's also talk about having a medical marijuana card and losing your insurance. And right now I only have insurance until next year in July. And then I have nothing. I don't qualify for the Medicaid. I don't qualify for Medicare. So I'm hanging on to whatever I got for as long as I got. Plus, I went with a friend to a dispensary, and they don't carry what I need.
Oh, I hear this all the time. You know, people are excited because they're a legal state, and then they go to a dispensary, and it's nowhere near what they need. I probably get, Patty, 60 to 80 calls a week with a rendition of, you know, been on the oil for 2 months. Why isn't it working? When they circle back to the dispensary, it's nowhere near what they need. You've got to be just so careful about what you're sourcing.
Yes. And so I buy it off of the street from a known person. Her husband actually had bile duct cancer. Mm. And so she helps me. But if she wouldn't be helping me, I don't know what I would do.
Yeah, I get a lot of people reaching out, just asking, you know, where's a safe, reliable place to go?
Yes.
You know, and that's the thing. It's really hard to find what you need, but when you get it, it can sure make the difference.
Yes, ma'am. And she only makes for me and one other person. Mm. So, we drive 8 hours there. She lives way the opposite, you know, opposite of the hospital. So it's a whole day trip, mm-hmm. and not very cheap.
But worth it.
Oh, I'm alive.
Yeah, you'd be dead if it wasn't for that.
Yeah, absolutely. I know I was. I lost 70. I couldn't eat. I couldn't eat at all. Now, I have to say that too, though, because it didn't help me eat. No matter how much I took, if I smoked it or I swallowed it, that was chemo and cancer, but it never gave me an appetite. I lost over 70 pounds like within 2 months, quick.
Did you keep it off, the 70 pounds?
No, I gained about 35 pounds back so I could fit into my clothes. No, so now that's what the problem is. I'm gaining the weight, but I don't have the energy to work it all off. So that's my goal now, is you know, more movement. So that's what I try to do, make sure I move more. That I think makes you healthy as well.
Yeah.
Just moving your body.
It's when you said move more, I just had a flash of the doctor telling you that your internal parts would drop out.
Yes. No, you have no idea. Your insides
and
are
then you're
going to
move.
Out.
Now you want to move more.
Yeah.
Delicately.
Slowly.
I do. I crave moving. So that's the only thing that I'm sure anybody in my position, you're thankful that you're at this spot. But I miss me. You know, I miss me, but I'm still here, and I'm so thankful that I am still here, because it was that's scary. I never thought I'd hear those words ever in my life.
When you hear those words, I always like to ask people this: when you hear those words that you have 6 to 8 months to live, and you mentioned that you started giving away your stuff and selling your stuff, what goes through your mind on a daily basis?
Oh, it still goes through my mind every single day, all day long. Originally, like I said, he told me, the first doctor, he said, I never do this to people over the phone, but I've got to tell you, it's not good. And I was sitting in my daughter's living room in Texas, and I just point blank, what are we looking? And he said, 6 to 8 months with maybe a few extra months if you do chemo. And I couldn't breathe. I couldn't breathe. I just wanted to retire. I was a travel agent for a large company for the court. I was did corporate travel, and I just wanted to retire and sit on my back porch and not talk on the phone, because that's all I did all day long was talk on the phone, and get yelled at because the airline lost their luggage, and I just wanted to just look at the trees, and so I was angry. And, you know, I've been a good person, and there's mean people out there that are enjoying life, and I wasn't going to get to enjoy life.
It certainly sounds like it's changed your attitude towards life.
Oh, yes. Yes. Yes, you want to hear the worst part about cancer? Well, it really makes me angry at some people, but my boyfriend... And I have a hard time saying that word because I'm in my 50s and he's not a boy. So I don't know what to call him. So I call him my roommate or the guy that takes out the trash. That's what I call him sometimes.
Call him your partner.
Yeah, my partner. So, well, he's my caregiver. I couldn't have done it without him as well. There, he goes to get my medicine when I can't go. He drives me to the hospital just in case I don't get to come back. But, both his parents has cancer, both. And then now it's me. So he's taking care of both of his parents and then me. And as a matter of fact, his dad, I don't think is going to make it much longer, but his dad is a sheriff, police officer, won't talk about it, won't look at you. He knows I am, but he won't even try it. And he just got out of the hospital, and they've offered hospice, but he won't even try it. That's what I'm saying.
Yeah, it's some people are so resistant toward it. But you know what? If a doctor gave them a medication, knowing that there are serious side effects, they would probably take it because it was doctor recommended.
Absolutely. He is so sick right now that, and from taking so much medication that they can't even give him antibiotics anymore because his body just doesn't even react. But, and you know, that's some of the reasons I can't watch TV anymore because of the commercials. Every commercials, it's about people being sick. Mm-hmm. Every single commercial. And the drugs they give you for an eye ache, and now your ears run, your nose runs. Your hand's going to fall off, but your eye's not going to leak anymore. You know? And I just can't watch it anymore. But I also have to say I didn't really take even an aspirin before because I just don't like the chemicals. I'm kind not a hippie. You know what I'm saying? I don't make my own. I just don't like all the chemicals. I could tell when I would take an aspirin for a headache. And, you know, your headache's gone in an hour, but now you got a stomach ache. Mm-hmm. And you're like, why do I got a stomach ache? I took that aspirin. So that's why I don't like to take anything. But
Patty, let me ask you, how did your kids react to the prognosis that you had 6 to 8 months to live?
Well, of course, my daughter, I was with my daughter at the time. And I decided to come back north and not stay with her because she offered to take care of me. And I kind of wanted to be alone, you know, if that was the end. Not that I didn't want to be around my children. They want my grandchildren. My dad passed away from mesothelioma, asbestos cancer. And so I was with him, and I didn't want my children to see me at the end. My oldest son... He's super army soldier, was super against it. He's the super, you know, marathoner, runs. You can't smoke a cigarette around him, nothing, right? And he is so encouraging now that, of course, he's doing research. And he even started going to school for microbiology. Mm-hmm. And was studying the cannabinoid system and the cannabinoid system, but then he changed his major to philosophy. Mm-hmm. So there's that kid.
Okay.
So there, there.
Yeah, they're all different. They've all got their own path to follow.
Yes, yes. Yeah, but they're great. very encouraging, and none of them are able to financially help, but of course offered if they could. Mm-hmm. So,
are you cancer-free today?
I am. I had scans on May 31st, and there was no visible signs of cancer. My next scans, I'm still on the every 3 months scans, so my next scans are August 31st.
This month?
Correct. And I just went and had my blood work done yesterday for the CA125 cancer marker number.
Any results yet?
No. I'm anxiously awaiting. My number has been going up a bit on each of the visits. When I first went in, it was at 149. When I was no visible signs of cancer, I had gone down to a 6. Last test, it had gone back up to a 30. So it's increasing by about 7 or 8 every visit. Hmm. 38 is the magic number. So it doesn't necessarily mean that there's cancer, but it's a marker.
It can be an indicator, yeah. I mean, I know we've seen people whose numbers go up and it turns out to be nothing.
Right.
I know we were talking earlier, Patty, and you were saying that you've been on the same oil all along.
Right.
I'm wondering if what you need to do is switch up those strains. We do see a much higher success rate with a mixed strain oil for starters, but cancer's really smart. It can figure it out after a while. So switching strains might just do the trick.
Are you talking strains as in different
plants?
Yes.
So yes, different types of indica or indica dominant.
Yes, I am doing that. Well, I know that. I don't know enough about. I know that one time I go and she calls it the Flying Dutchman, and the next time this is the Purple Monster. So is that what you're saying?
Well, if you can get an oil that's blended, more than one strain in it, certainly we see much better results.
Okay. I also do the THC oil in coconut oil. Just like a dropper full under my tongue as I'm sitting here watching TV.
So that's in between your other dosing? Is that what you're saying?
Yeah, but that's only if I happen to look over and I see it and remember. Mm-hmm. And I'm like, oh, I'll just take that right now.
Yeah, a little microdose here and there.
Mm-hmm. You're right, right.
Yep, right on.
That's good. Patty, have you ever gone back to your first doctor who said you had 6 to 8 months to live and told him you're still around?
Not yet. At my 5-year clear mark, you bet I'm going there.
Okay, we want photos and video coverage.
Oh, I'm going. Even I go to Cancer Treatment Center of America in Chicago. It's actually Zion, Illinois. And they have every year they have like a survivor picnic parade celebration. Mm-hmm. And when I see it, so I've seen it twice, well, seen the people participating, I can't even look at them yet. Mm. So I'm going to be there. I think too, a lot of it's positive thinking, because I can tell when I start getting a negative Nelly that I just need to pick up the bootstraps and keep on going.
Yeah, you do. Patty, it's wonderful to talk to you. Maybe at 5-year mark, we'll do this again and have another chat. Thank you.
Sounds wonderful. Thank you, and thank you all for what you're doing.
Thank you, Patty.
Thank you, Patty. Appreciate it.
Have a great day.
You too. Bye-bye. Corey, it's always fascinating to talk to people who are given months to live, as you were. And here they are, a couple of years later, they're still alive, taking cannabis oil and are healthy. I think what it does, it really speaks to the medicinal value of cannabis oil, which so many people still today are fearful of.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Well, yeah, they're afraid of it, but they'll take those narcotics with no problem.
That's episode 226 of Cannabis Health Radio. We thank you very much for listening, and we hope you listen to the program, not only listen to the program, but spread it around the world. Share it with your friends on your social media platforms. And just a reminder, on our website, we have a donate page. If you'd like to assist Cannabis Health Radio, we'd greatly appreciate it. Thanks very much for listening.
You've been listening to the Cannabis Health Radio podcast. Visit our website, cannabishealthradio.com, and follow us on Facebook and Twitter.